I was going to ask you, did you ever complete and get typed out your results of the investigation of the 14th?
I just finished typing it tonight, and I'm going to get her on the mimeograph tomorrow.
Oh, good, good. I spent all day one day out at the FAA Flight Service Center in Auburn. Right?
How'd you make out?
Well, I finally got through that tape, and they let me listen to the tape that night. Then they also let me run off a copy of it. And I have conditional permission to broadcast. And what I have to do now to get the final permission is they would like to hear what we're going to do with it.
I see.
And their concern, naturally, is that we don't make misuse of the tape.
Right.
In other words, give somebody the impression of something that didn't happen.
Right.
So I still have yet to type out the rest of the story. And what I'm going to do is just do a recreation of that night and let people know what happened at what time. And it's interesting that one of the supervisors out there, who was kind of handling me that day, as you say, well, he just tried to, you know, poo-poo the whole thing, and there was really nothing. And he listened to the tape, and there was nothing on there. The tape is very significant. There were at least, I got all the information at home, and there were four or five aircraft involved. And here's how it all developed. Are you interested,
Definitely.
Okay, here's how it all developed. The first call came in about 7:48. Now, when I say the first call, I'm saying the first call regarding this McKenna thing.
Yes.
Earlier in the evening, they had had reports of what had been described evidently by pilots as high-altitude meteor showers, which are evidently a fairly common occurrence.
Yes.
And now these reports were about 5 o'clock that night. Then at almost 7:48 on the nose, if I recall correctly from my info, the first report came in from a small private craft identifying himself on the tape as 20 X-ray. And he was flying in that area near McKenna, flying in a, what was it, a southerly there? No. Well, I forget the direction, but he was, you know, approaching the Seattle Flight Services area that they're responsible for.
Yes.
And he called in, and he says, 20 X-ray calling Seattle Flight Center. Something, it looks like something just exploded off my right wingtip. And they asked him if it looked like an aircraft, and he said he couldn't tell. And then a United commercial jet, evidently flying up from Portland, the captain calls in and says, this is United Flight, whatever it was, reaffirming that Seattle Flight Center, all three of us saw it. Appeared to look like it was an explosion either on the ground or I think a low level elevation. And then 20 X-ray butts back in and says, well, it was high in the sky when I saw it. Okay, at this point, Seattle Flight Center thinks that maybe a plane might have gone down. Oh, during this time, they're describing what appear to be fires down below.
Yes.
Or, no, wait, I take that back. That's later. So at this point, the FAA is concerned that a plane might be down, and so they ask him about fuselage and, you know, and did it look like a plane or whatever. Then Seattle Flight asks the United pilot if he can look over on his left, because he is flying parallel to 20 X-ray. And 20 X-ray saw this on his right wing tip. So he asked the United pilot, who is flying in a parallel direction, only, you know, quite a distance apart, if he can look to his left and see anything on the ground. To which he says, yeah, it looks like three fires down there, one big one and some smaller ones around it. Okay, at this point, another private craft comes in and says, hey, I heard you guys talking about this fireball thing. I saw it to my east. And then the Seattle flight comes on and says, no, sir, that would be in a different direction from where you're at. And he comes back on very distorted, but you can make him out, and he says, well, I saw a fireball fall out of the sky. Okay. So then Seattle Flight Center starts getting some sporadic ELT transmissions. You know what those are?
No.
Okay, that's an emergency locator transmitter. And that is FAA. All planes are required by law to carry these things. And upon impact, they go off and give off a signal if they're working right, so that rescue craft can find a downed plane. So they start getting some sporadic emissions, which is a fairly common occurrence, but nevertheless, they never take any chances, you know?
Yes.
They always got to find, you know, try to find out, you know, sometimes a pilot will jam something against one, they'll go off and all sorts of stuff. So at this point, with what the pilots saw and the sporadic beeps, they're really kind of of thinking a plane might be down here. So then there is another private craft. Oh, by the way, and then during this time there was another commercial liner, I believe it was a Northwest Orient, who also confirmed the fire on the ground business. Okay. And then they go on by and go about their business. The United pilot is asked to swoop down as low as he can see and tell him what he sees. So at an elevation of 10,000 feet and descending, he gives his description of the fires below. Now, you know, he's still pretty high up in the air. And he then plots he gives the Seattle Flight Center his coordinates so that they can plot the area where this thing is.
Yes.
Okay. So then they're gone. Then another private craft, I believe he's identified as Gross 54, comes onto the scene. He tells them, he can see the fire and stuff. And they ask him, now they're thinking heavy, it's a plane down this time, they ask him if he would be kind enough to dip down in and see if he can take a look. Okay. He does. And now at this point, the only two people who got fairly close to what it was on the ground was this guy in, I forget his identification, what he identified himself as. Well, I think it was 26 Quebec. 26 Quebec. And later on, and the Fort Lewis pilot were the only two guys that got in low enough, right? Well, this is what happened. Anyway, the other four planes were up pretty high. But 26 Quebec says, yeah, he'll go down and take a look. So I guess he swoops down to about, 4,000 feet or something. And lo and behold, he gives the same, almost to a T, the same description that he gave the military pilot.
Uh-huh.
He comes on and says, he says, whatever it was, whatever it hit, must have gone in vertical. He says, if it was a plane, it went in vertical, because it looks like there's some sort of a, looks like it gutted out the area, looks like kerosene or some kind of fuel burning. This is the point where he says, I've seen a lot of flash fires, and that's no flash fire.
So is this the one that had previous experience with the Forest Service?
Well, evidently, yeah, this is the guy. This is the guy that says, I've seen a lot of flash fires, and that's no flash fire.
Okay.
He says, the area's pretty gutted out down there, and I can't remember if he used the word crater or not. But it was, it was obvious to him at 3,000 or 4,000 feet that it was not a flash fire and that there was some kind of a hole in the ground, or what appeared to be a hole, which is the same description that he gave, and the three crewmen who were aboard the chopper talked it over, and that's the conclusion they came to, that it was some sort of a crater. And this guy in 26 Quebec were the only pilots that night who went down close enough to get any kind of a look at it. And their descriptions match up almost to a T.
That is good.
And the next thing I found out, the reason why nobody found it the next day, including us, is that we were looking in the wrong area.
Well, should you have been looking further north?
No. Well, we were north-northwest of where, according to this United Airlines pilot, he saw this thing.
Yes.
And the elevation of the peaks around there does not correspond with the area that we were looking in.
Would that put it about 13 miles south of McKenna, the original? Or they should have been looking?
I've got the coordinates at home, and that sounds about right. I've got the coordinates in pilot talk.
Yes.
I don't know physically where that places it. I know I've got the coordinates written down in pilot lingo.
Yeah.
But I do know that we were a good 4 to 5 statute miles out of that area.
Right.
We never looked. We should have looked. See, what's opposite of north-northwest? South-southeast?
Yeah.
Okay, we should have looked more south-southeast.
Well, the reason I mentioned that was because when I talked to FAA information officer, he gave me about 4 different locations that they had.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll tell you, as far as I can determine, we were down there the next day in a helicopter, and the only other... There were 2 other helicopters, the Fort Lewis Sheriff's Office, and I think a news AP had a helicopter down there. And we were all looking in the same area, which is not the right place, according to this United pilot who radioed in his location at the time he was directly over this thing. Now, granted, he was descending at the time he gave his location over this thing, but they tell me at the FAA that would have put us within a mile of it.
Okay, now here's an important point, too. I was reading some statements made by some of the astronomers who came out here to investigate this thing, and they all stated to the man that there is no case on history where a meteor has ever struck the Earth and started a fire. Well, that kind of set me back a little bit, you know. I'd never heard of that before.
Hmm.
So what, if something struck down there, plowed in, why, it wasn't a meteor.
Well, you know, I would tend to think that if it weren't for the description that you gave and this guy in 2-6 Quebec gave, I would tend to think it was a flash fire. You know, because I've been thinking about that too. And I have to agree that if a meteor probably hit, you know, number one, as you said, it would have registered on the sensors for the seismograph.
Oh, yes.
Number two, it probably would have caused quite a jolt around there. You know, if there was any kind of a massive object.
Well, every person within 25 miles would have thought it.
And the only thing, one of the other possibilities is,
that's why I was interested in getting a hold of that, and I tried, and I didn't have any success. I wanted to find out whether he really believed he was looking at a creator.
Oh, I told you I talked to him the second time, didn't I?
Yes.
And he told me again the second time, the way they came to the conclusion that it was a crater was that they had passed 3 slash fires before they got to this one. And to him and the 3 other guys who were aboard, it looked like a crater.
Uh-huh.
And that's how they came to that conclusion, because it didn't look like the other one.
South of the Mossy Rock, Finbar area.
Uh-huh.
And they had climbed this hill so they could get a good view of the area around it looking for deer. And they got to the top of the hill, and they looked north, and here, he says, it was almost in a straight line between Mossy Rock and Finbar, and he figured off into the Finbar area was this huge, glowing, white object hovering above this hill right over the treetops.
Uh-huh.
And they watched this thing for about 7 minutes. Said that it remained stationary for several minutes, and then it started moving upward. And he finally got the binoculars on the thing, and he said it was so big that it took in about 3/4 of the binocular view, and it moved off to
the north. Well, he must have got a pretty good shot, a pretty good look at it then.
Yes, very definitely. He said there was a rotating band around the center of the object, and as it moved upward, it changed from white to pink to red, and as it built up speed, it got up to a bright red and then moved off to the southwest.
Did he notice any windows or anything?
No, just the light effect around it. But it moved out of the Finbar area. Now, I'm wondering, you know,
How high did he say above the treetops it was?
Right at the treetops. I haven't had a chance to get back to him. He was calling from the job. He works for Weyerhaeuser. He was calling from the field, apparently, because he and his boss had worked all morning trying to find an organization to report this to.
Uh-huh.
And he finally got through to us, and I'm going to call back this week to his home. He'll be back out of the field, apparently.
Uh-huh.
He works with research of some kind out in the forest. And go into this a little deeper with him regarding the possibility that this thing could have been sitting on the ground in that area. But,
Sorry. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hold on just a minute. The more possibilities I come up with, you know, if you look at all of the possibilities, you have to include that if there was a crater, there is a possibility, because of the logging and stuff in that area, somebody may have gotten a hold of some dynamite. Maybe some kids, right?
Possible.
You know, they could have just blown a goddamn hole in the ground, you know, out in the woods, just so nobody would get hurt, just to you know, blow up some dynamite. And they could have just, you know, thrown about 10 sticks in and just a little long fuse and got the hell out. And just blew a hell of a hole in the woods out there.
But considering the fact that it's super rugged territory, it's not very likely that
they would
go
right.
That far.
That's right. You always have to look at that.
Yeah. And of course, that particular case there is only part of the picture. Because we know there were five objects that night. Five separate objects at different times and different locations. And this will show up on the map I'm going to send you. And it all started just about a little after 5 p.m.
Uh-huh.
And these objects, every one of them were traveling, with the exception of the one down by Sinbar, every one of them were traveling in a horizontal trajectory. And this is an extreme rarity for any kind
of... Well, you have to look at this, too. It could be possibly that working in what's his name, 26 Quebec or whatever, what they were hovering over could have been a flash fire, a large one, or it could have been a flash fire where they, you know, maybe a bulldozer dug out a big hole to keep it from spreading around or something. You know, there's just so many possibilities of what it could be. It just is, it's mind-boggling.
Oh, sure.
And
it could also be something sitting on the ground.
Yeah, I'm so damn discouraged about this thing because blew $1,000 worth of helicopter rides looking in the wrong goddamn area, and I just know that, somebody's probably gotten to this thing long before now. Whatever it was.
Right.
And I'm just debating on whether to keep trying to get in there and take a look at it.
See, the big problem on that particular case was the lack of witnesses on the ground to get any kind of a triangulation. And I only know of four. And this is rare, extremely rare for anything that spectacular coming out of the sky, even in a desolate area like that.
Hey, Bob, do you know, I don't know if you ever catch the Tomorrow program on NBC?
Occasionally.
They had an hour one night on UFOs recently, maybe a couple of months ago.
That's when the airline pilot was on, or the ex-military pilot? I guess he was the airline pilot.
I believe it was.
Yeah.
They also had a producer on from this NBC specialist coming up.
Right.
Okay, you recall him talking about this number, this toll-free number that some government organization, I believe.
That's Alan Hynek's organization, Center for UFO Studies.
Yeah, and in other words, there are only a few, agencies in various areas that have this thing. It's not a public number.
Yeah, it's just for law enforcement agencies.
Yeah, have you ever been able to get your hands on that number?
Sure, hang on.
And where is that? What city is that in?
That would be, it's in Illinois, the state of Illinois, I think it's Evanston.
And what's the organization?
Center for UFO Studies.
Do they depend on you for some of their information?
Oh, yes. Any organization they ask to feed to them.
Did you happen to talk to them about this incident?
One of the investigators called him.
I see. One of your people.
Right.
And had they received any calls from any law enforcement agencies about this thing?
Up to that time, they received nothing.
But after your investigator called, had they gotten anything from anybody?
No.
In other words, nobody called them about this thing.
Not to our knowledge. You see, the problem here is that this thing didn't break into the open until the McKenna story came out.
Uh-huh.
And all this, all the activity that preceded was just swept under the rug. In fact, I think the whole McKenna story would have been swept under the rug if it hadn't been for KJR.
Yeah.
That's the sad story of the UFO subject. There's another number you might want, too, Chet, and that's the Department of Emergency Services in Olympia.
Department Emergency Services.
Now, the emergency number there, the reason I'm giving you this is they take the UFO reports, but the emergency number is...
And that's where?
It's in Olympia.
What do they have to do with it?
Well, they handle the reports through civil defense.
I see. Well, I'll tell you, I got one last shot at this thing down at McKenna, and that is, I talked to Wiggins' CO about the chance of them, on one of their training flights, letting me go along with him in his helicopter and diverting to that area to see if he could find it once again.
Mm-hmm.
And he has... they gave me a conditional okay, and that he could do that if, like, for example, I was doing a story on their, you know, massed operations down there. He could do that, which I said there's no problem. So far, I haven't heard back from him, and I was going to get give him a call here pretty soon, and I haven't had a chance. But that's about my last shot. You got to get in there with some sort of an aircraft. That's all there is to it.
Oh, that's the only way.
And I know that the station isn't about to go for any more helicopters.
Well, if it was midsummer, it'd be a different story. You could get the party together and walk in and kind of scour the area, but not
Boy, now. I'll tell you, Bob, you could walk in there forever. I mean, it's so thick in places. I mean, there's a lot of logging roads, but it's so thick that, shit, you could be 10 feet away from something there and all that huge forest land and not see it.
Right.
It'd be a waste of time. Unless you had it pretty well pinpointed. And, So anyway, that's that.
There's one thing I want to find out. If we get a UFO scoop story, how do we get a hold of you if you're not working?
Yeah, this damn thing, God, I'll tell you, it irks me. I mean, it irks me that somehow, I want to believe that nobody did it on purpose, but somehow we just didn't get the right stuff, you know, the right information to go down there and look for it. It just really irks me.
Well, let me put it this way. If something came out of the sky and that thing was tracked by McCord radar.
Which they say it wasn't.
Yeah. Which says possible that it was.
Uh-huh.
But if it was, and they knew that there was something on the ground, an unknown on the ground, they would have sent the search parties elsewhere.
Well, that occurred to me, too, but why would they, you know, only divert us by about 4 or 5 miles? Why not 10 or 15 to really keep us away from it, you know, or 20 or 30, you know?
Well, with that kind of terrain and that kind of weather, you were quite a way south of the original position of 13 miles south of McKenna.
Yeah. Son of a gun. Well...
But like I said, if... they could send a helicopter over there with infrared sensing equipment. Any area where they thought something came down. And even if it had left, if it had crashed or if it had landed and left, they would have known about it.
Hmm.
So I think it's just going to end up being another one of those mysteries.
Yeah, it's possible. And it's also possible that the Air Force didn't track anything, that nobody tracked anything, and that all the Army knew about it was that, you know, Morgan had been diverted on a training flight because the FAA thought a plane might have gone down.
Uh-huh.
And he went out there and he saw, you know, a flash fire, but no fuselage or anything, and so he came back and they let him drop at that. It's, you know, I mean, it's also possible that they're pretty quick to cast off things, too.
Policy.
Yeah. Well, it's awfully...
Well, it won't be the last incident like that to happen around here.
By the way, Bob, just diverting for a second, did your man ever check out those photographs from the family?
Presented them to some people who were supposed to be photographic experts or knowledgeable about photography, and they said that they couldn't do a thing, really. They looked suspicious, but they couldn't do a thing unless they had the negatives and had a chance to wash the negatives out and inspect them.
Yeah, right. Had they gone anything beyond that point?
No.
Okay. Why did they have to tell you why they looked suspicious?
Perfection.
Too good a shot, huh?
Yeah, perfection in the fact that the young man who took the pictures was a student of photography in school.
Uh-huh.
And had all the equipment and so forth to do what would have to be done to get pictures like that.
Uh-huh.
But
Well, I thought they were pretty good shots myself. But the only thing that keeps gnawing about me about that is that I just don't see the mother and the daughter and the son coming in here. And
given a good story.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know, they got no money. They got hardly any PR out of it. And the only reason they had called here, because, you know, we had done one story. A story one night about a couple of people who saw something near their area. And we had called in to say, you know, just a couple of weeks before, my daughter saw this thing in the sky, and she came home and got me and my son, and my son grabbed his camera, and we went back, and he got a couple of pictures of it, you know.
Right.
So it kind of evolved from that, and...
Well, that leaves the door open.
Right. Yeah, God, I wish... if you get a chance to talk to that guy, I wish you'd, you know... See if he could kind of run that down and at least confirm whether or not those negatives are phony, or whether the pictures are phony. I just was so impressed by their, their average Americanish, you couldn't have found three more average blue-collar type people, I don't think.
Yes. And, well, I know that he was working on that, and this thing of the 14th came along, and that really threw us off. Because we've been really hitting that pretty hard. But I'll get him on that again and see if we can't get a hold of those negatives and get some results on it.
I'm kicking around the idea that maybe I could put together, you know, with this the report with the tapes of the tapes I have of the FAA Flight Control Center that night.
Yes.
Kicking around the idea, maybe it might not be a bad idea to put a half-hour program together. Use that as the intro, and perhaps have you with your findings following that, and then maybe we could bring in, or perhaps a doctor or somebody.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, I'll have to think about that.
But that was really a special night, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it was odd. I must admit, and I like a lot of other people, are attracted by oddities. And I was the thing that I'm most amazed about is that couple from Tacoma whose name I can't recall now, who called me, and you know the conversation between I guess it was Bitten and the Lewis County Sheriff's Office had splashed over. And they had heard everything right on. I found out later, except the part about the ground troops moving in.
Yeah, that was really great.
And she was damn sure that that's what she heard. And naturally, when I talked later with the Lewis County Sheriff's Office, I found out that that's what the conversation had been.
Uh-huh.
So,
you know, the thing that is really put a lot of support under the events of that night, or at least one of the major events of that, was the object that passed from the northwest to the southeast. I got several letters from people up on Whidbey Island and several from the Navy personnel up there, including the commander of a naval flight, which had just landed.
Uh-huh.
And they were parked on the runway at the time. And he was looking due north. He gave all the proper coordinates.
Uh-huh.
And he said when this object came into view, it moved across the sky from northwest to southeast, and they watched and watched and watched and watched. And he says they watched that thing from 4 to 5 minutes. He was timing it with his clock.
Uh-huh.
And he says he's never seen anything like it.
Well, I'll be damned.
And then I got one of our contacts up in Snohomish County and got a chance to talk to a lot of the sheriff's deputies that were looking for the escaped prisoners up on Island at the time. And that was another object in itself there. That thing passed from due north to straight south right over Camino Island.
Going fast or slow?
Very slow. In fact, the one officer who first spotted it in the northern sky, he says at first it was two brilliant orange lights hanging in the sky, and then they expanded and merged And then the thing started to move and the sparks started flying out the back, and here she came, due south, right over the island, and heading due south towards Seattle. And that's where that copter pilot McKenna picked it up. And then that student on Queen Anne Hill.
I'll be there. Well, the next step is, I guess, might see if I can get a clear day and see if the Air Force will let me go in a helicopter. He said he'd like to go out there again, just to see what it was.
Oh, that would be great. Get a nice clear day. Wow.
Well, I'll tell you. Well, listen, since that happened, have you had any other reports of anything of any kind of nature?
No, things have been real quiet around here.
I'll kick around the idea of maybe putting together a half-hour program in that take. Would you be interested in that?
Sure.
Okay, if I... The determining factor is time, if I can get time enough to schedule everything to do it. But I think that might be, might be kind of fun to do.
Well, your listeners are real interested in that subject anyway.
Oh, you betcha. Every time we have something like that, it goes, crazy. That thing was, the call with tonight is odd. Did you ever call the two couple that I gave you the phone number?
Oh, yes. Yeah, the ones that were driving down towards Milton.
Well, she said they were south of I-5 near Tacoma.
Yeah, just entering Milton, right, a little community there at Milton.
Yeah, did you talk to him?
Yes.
What did you think?
Well, I tell you, he said that this object was huge. He said it was traveling under the clouds. And that I asked him, well, what about the size? How would you estimate the size? And he says, well, you could take a car key, the round portion of the car key, and hold it up to the sky and just hold it out. He says, that's about the size that thing was in the sky. This is the method used for determining size, real quickly. And that would be just about as big as your thumb out there, the end of your thumb.
That'd be pretty goddamn big.
And that is big. And he says it was low, under the clouds. And he said it came over the top to the car, almost the top, slightly to the west, and that when it got out in front of them, it just clicked out, just like snapping off the light.
What kind of color did it give you?
Blue-green, blue-white.
No.
So... But unfortunately, the thing wasn't in sight long enough to really get any data out of it.
Well, that baffles me. I mean, I just can't see why they wouldn't pick up something like that on radar. Unless maybe they do and just tell me they don't. I guess it's always a possibility. But then, I got a call from the one guy who said he saw it. It was a shooting star. And another guy said he saw it, looked like a shooting star. Well, in other words, there were probably more than one or two people that saw it.
Right.
In your experience, have you ever called anybody and on something like that? Had them ever tell you that they tracked anything?
No. This there's very strict regulations regarding putting out that kind of information. Not only for the military, but the FAA too.
You know, that's something I never did ask anybody. I never did ask them if I called there and asked them about that, if they could tell me that. Something I should probably do. Well, listen, Bob, we're looking forward to receiving your information on that.
I'm going to try to have that in the mail tomorrow.
Yeah, and I'll let you know, naturally, if I decide to put a half hour thing together on that deal.
Great.
Okay?
Right.
Talk to you later.
Bye, Jet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.